Hello, my name is Joshua Gilliland, and I'm one of the two founding attorneys of The Legal Geeks, a blog and podcast that explores geek issues and the law. Thank you for joining me to hear our 2015 holiday special, Star Wars: The Law Awakens. We're going to take a moment and talk about all things legal with Star Wars because, hey, that's what we do here. We're going to take a look at our Jedi judges, all those judges out there who have quoted Star Wars. We will examine how Finn could be the owner of Luke's original lightsaber. We'll talk about Defense of Others, rebel law, medical malpractice, droid ownership, employee safety, torture, and self-defense. With that, let's go to light speed. People love Star Wars. This past summer, we got to speak at San Diego Comic-Con for the first time, and it was glorious. It was amazing to be there, to be part of the magic. And we were super humbled by the turnout that we had for people to come see our panel. We probably had somewhere between 250 to 300 people. People lined up in advance before 7 p.m. on Thursday night to see us. The line went out the door. Not everyone was able to get in. It was an amazing night to be a Star Wars rock star talking about legal issues in this wonderful series. And thank you everyone who turned out to participate in the magic. Now, there are many judges who love Star Wars. If you do a search on your favorite legal research platform, you can find thousands and thousands of cases with Star Wars references. Well, let's think about some of the judges that we have today and where they fit in generationally. We have many who are in their 40s to 60s. A 46-year-old judge was 9 years old when Star Wars came out. And when you think about that, they were kind of in the prime of their childhood when that magical May of 1977 happened. They played with the toys. They believed in it. And they lined up from 77 to 80 to 83 for all of the original movies. Well, one such judge is named Matthew Chirino, and he's in New York. And his chambers have Star Wars toys in them. It's an incredible collection. And in one of his opinions, he actually worked in a Star Wars quote where he stated, "In fact, on August 1st, 2012, your tweets will be sent across the universe to a galaxy far, far away." So that was his little homage. There have been others. There have been many others. One judge stated, "This attempted diversion, the legal equivalent of Obi-Wan Kenobi's 'These aren't the droids you're looking for,' see Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, Lucasfilms 1977, is unavailing." Another popular quote is Yoda. People love quoting Yoda. And in one of them, we have this judge who states, "Size matters not," Yoda tells us, "nor does time." So judges will reach out to Star Wars and Star Trek and other pop culture to help make a point. And they really do love Star Wars popping into opinions. So let's talk about the lightsaber. So in the previews that we've seen for the new movie, Finn has the lightsaber that was originally Anakin's, then became Luke's. So let's trace the history of this lightsaber. From what I can tell, Anakin got this lightsaber during the Battle of Geonosis. He had lost his original one earlier in Episode 2. It was crushed. And that was his. We then fast forward to Episode 3. And Anakin turns to the dark side and uses that lightsaber to cut off Mace Windu's hand, go on a mass killing spree, slaughter younglings, and then decides to take on Obi-Wan Kenobi when Obi-Wan goes to Mustafar as a stowaway on Padme's ship. After Obi-Wan defeats Anakin, he goes into exile. Well, 20 years later, he gives the lightsaber to Luke on Tatooine. Fast forward to Empire Strikes Back, and we're in Cloud City. And in the lightsaber fight between Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker, Vader cuts off Luke's hand, and then we hear, "I am your father." So the lightsaber and Luke's hand are lost in the clouds. Gravity kicks in, and that probably should land somewhere on a planet. Or if it's a gas giant, I don't know where, but it's floating around. So let's think about what happened on Mustafar. Anakin had killed younglings, turned against the Jedi. The Jedi effectively were the law enforcement in the galaxy prior to the Empire taking over and forming and replacing the Republic. Obi-Wan, in his fight, I think would have legal justification after defeating Anakin to take the lightsaber. First off, he thought Anakin was going to die. On one level, it's too bad Obi-Wan didn't have a slightly stronger work ethic and just give him a little force push into the lava, but then we wouldn't have the other three movies. In California, it's right for law enforcement to take a dangerous weapon. So if somebody's convicted of a crime, law enforcement will confiscate the weapon. It's a forfeiture. It's rules that kick in. If there is a crime scene, a weapon's just not left there. And so if somebody is convicted of a crime, their weapons are confiscated. Well, arguably that's what happened here. Anakin slaughtered a room full of children. He had turned to the dark side. Obi-Wan thought he was dead, so he took the lightsaber. Makes a lot of sense. There's another theory at play here, and that's spoils of war. We're now in an age-old war between the Sith and the Jedi. And the Jedi, Obi-Wan, having defeated Darth Vader, was right to take the lightsaber at that point in time, because again, you're not going to leave out a dangerous weapon for someone to find. Seems like this was legitimate, given these circumstances and the war that was now taking place. So he was right to take it and then gift it to Luke 20 years later. Now, Cloud City, you can argue, I think with a straight face, since Luke's hand was cut off, the lightsaber was lost. Lost property is property that the owner no longer possesses because of an accident, negligence, or carelessness, and that cannot be located by an ordinary diligent search. Well, hand cut off, if Cloud City is on a gas giant, where's it going to go? So he didn't also say come back and use the force to find it. So you can say with a straight face, it's lost. Arguably abandoned, because could a Jedi use the force and find it? Maybe, but that is asking a lot, and they had other things to do, like save Han and defeat the Empire, as opposed to going back and looking for a single lightsaber. Also, with lost property, there are lots of other rules that kick in. Is the property of something of value? Do you expect someone to come looking for it? How much time has passed? If 7 years has passed, it can then be deemed abandoned. There's all kinds of factors that play in here, but there's a very strong argument that after 30-some years between the fight on Cloud City to Episode 7, that was an abandoned lightsaber, and whoever finds it, it's theirs. Now, how does Finn come into possession of the lightsaber? I don't know. I look forward to finding out the movies, and I'm not going to tell you until a lot of us have seen it, so there are no spoilers. Let's now turn our attention to that planet full of wretched villainy and scum, Tatooine, and Obi-Wan Kenobi's defense of Luke Skywalker in the cantina in Mos Eisley. So in this scene in the cantina, we have Luke standing at the bar, and he's confronted by two assailants, and his life is threatened. Obi-Wan Kenobi pushes Luke out of the way, the lightsaber comes out, and Ponda Baba's right arm is cut off. Totally justified defense of others. Luke's life was in danger. Obi-Wan was well within his rights to defend Luke, so he was not in turn killed. Now, if you're not watching Star Wars Rebels, you should. It is an absolutely wonderful animated program that incorporates a lot of the feel of the original Star Wars movie. And it also paints a picture of why it was very easy for a rebellion to form, because the Empire was truly evil. Every crime seems punishable by treason in the Empire. In the pilot episode, we see that all trade is regulated through the Empire. And for a fruit vendor to get charged with treason for not registering his fruit, you could see this would be a horrible place to live. Street vendors get charged with treason. You also have the military conducting law enforcement, because when a theft is then done, instead of just the usual high-speed chase that takes place, they call in an airstrike. This is not a good, safe place for anyone to live, because the military is shooting people and charging them with treason and sending them to spice mines. And, you know, that's just not good stuff. But check it out if you haven't watched it. It is fantastic. While we're talking about Tatooine, let's take a moment back to go to episode 2. And in it, with Anakin Skywalker finding out about the death of his mother. She dies in his arms, and then he decides to murder all the sand people. When he talks to Padme about it, he admits, "I slaughtered them like animals, even the women and children." Here's a life lesson. If someone who's a prospective spouse says to you, "I slaughtered them all like animals," there's no fixing that. Do not reward that conduct with marriage. Now, some people might wonder, is this a hate crime? And the answer should be yes. He targeted people, in this case sand people, based upon their race or ethnicity. The only thing that was a constant in deciding to kill them was because they were all of the same species. The other factor to think about is, could the insanity defense apply? That he was so emotionally distraught about the loss of his mom that he did not understand the consequences of his actions, and thus was legally insane at the time that he went out and killed all those sand people. I think the insanity defense would apply to him in this circumstance alone. Now, if you've been reading the new Marvel Star Wars comics, the Darth Vader one is just outstanding. Well, in one of them, he is on Tatooine because he's trying to chase down who was that young pilot that blew up the Death Star. And after seeing Jabba the Hutt, he has some free time. And he goes out and starts killing sand people because apparently that's now a hobby. He's just exacting revenge 20 years later, killing sand people. And that definitely would be a hate crime and no defense to it. You also might wonder, what about the poor younglings? At the end of episode 3, total hate crime. Anakin targeted the younglings because they were Jedi, and whether it's a religious group, or if you want to say it's part of a race or ethnicity because of the midichlorians, then yes, you can say that it's definitely a hate crime because he just went out and started killing younglings because they were Jedi. Focusing on Vader, after Anakin, turned Vader, is badly burned and three limbs are cut off on Mustafar, he's treated. And that's when he truly becomes the cyborg Darth Vader that we all know and fear. Those medical droids did not treat Anakin's burns. And when you think about it, and all the Star Wars movies, it's the droids who are the doctors. You don't see organic doctors unless you're on a cloning facility. And then you might see a organic being who's calling the shots. But even then, there were droids in the Clone Wars who were working on cloning. Interesting thing with this. Does this mean that the standard of care in looking at a malpractice action is based upon the programming of the droids? If that were the case, arguably, they're not violating the standard of care because they're setting the standard of care. However, this sounds like a giant product defect case because if you are making droids that are supposed to treat people who are injured and they're not doing basic first aid on burns, in this case somebody who was lit on fire by lava, you got a serious problem here with a malpractice action, but in the form of a product defect case because they're not programmed correctly on how to treat burns. Well, let's talk about our favorite droids, R2-D2 and C-3PO. Now, C-3PO doesn't have that crisis moment of realizing Vader is his maker, but when you think about how C-3PO whines, kind of makes sense. Anakin did whine a lot, like a lot. So let's trace the ownership history of our favorite droids. And I go into a lot more detail about this on a blog post, so here's the abridged version. R2-D2 is state property on Naboo, and when Padme is escaping the planet when she's queen, R2 and a bunch of other astromechs come out and they're working on the ship while they're playing Blockade Runner. R2-D2 continues in the service of her while she is a senator. So he is either state property or turns into her personal property between episodes 1 to 2. C-3PO is built by Anakin, so in theory belongs to Anakin, but this is where it gets a little weird because generally children are not property owners, so it should be his mom, in theory. But he's also a slave, so does that mean that his owner actually owns C-3PO? So it's a little ugly there because, again, Tatooine is a horrible place to live. C-3PO is left with Shmi Skywalker when the Jedi take Anakin away. Now, the Jedi being law enforcement should not be leaving anyone in slavery. That just seems totally wrong. That'd be like a DEA agent coming across a human trafficking ring and going like, whoa, that's the FBI's problem. They just wouldn't do that. So I've always had a problem with the Jedi leaving her in slavery. Why? But anyway, C-3PO is separate property. And here's why. C-3PO was Shmi's personal property when she died after being kidnapped by the Sand People. She had since remarried. As separate property, through intestate succession, Anakin should have been the owner unless there was a will in which she had gifted, or in this case, willed, C-3PO to her new husband. Now, after Padme and Anakin get married, the droids should have remained separate property of each spouse unless they were gifted to each other. Unless they were gifted to each other, Padme owned R2-D2 until her death. Now, a couple alternate theories to think about here. Anakin is arguably responsible for Padme's death. He choked her. She eventually died from it. You could argue that he definitely had a role in her dying. As such, this should cut off any rights for him to inherit any of her property or community property because he helped kill her. And so we have code sections, at least in California, that say you don't get to do that. If you assault, murder a spouse, you're not getting their stuff afterwards. Now, let's take a look when we get to A New Hope, where there's obviously a new owner of the droids. Now, while C-3PO does acknowledge Captain Antilles as their master, Leia is the one who gives R2-D2 the mission. It's arguable she technically was their owner, and she sent them out to go find Obi-Wan Kenobi. And so she's exercising her rights of ownership, and one could argue that she gifted the droids to to Obi-Wan by giving R2 orders to go out and find Obi-Wan Kenobi. Now, a couple other theories can pop in here, because droids are still property. And our heroes got into an escape pod and then jettisoned out and landed on Tatooine. A escape pod is a lot like a lifeboat. And when you get into issues with derelict vessels, that one that is abandoned and deserted, this means that that property is also abandoned and deserted, which means the droids were thus abandoned and deserted, which means the Jawas, when they found them, were within their legal rights to take them and to sell them as if the droids were their own. It's an argument. I'm not saying it's the right argument, but it's definitely an argument. So, in theory, Luke inherited the droids because Uncle Owen bought the droids from the Jawas. Uncle Owen and Aunt Peru are killed through intestate succession. The droids belong to Luke at this point in time. And so when we think back to Return of the Jedi, where Luke gifted the droids to Jabba the Hutt, that might have been a valid gift. On the flip side, if that was supposed to be part of a contract for in return for Solo, Jabba did not perform and therefore breached the contract. Well, let's talk about how Vader likes being dad of the year, because in episode 4, he drugs Leia trying to get the location of the rebel base. We do not like forcing confessions in our legal system. We go so far as to say in a whole bunch of cases, it is revolting to the sense of justice if someone is going to be drugged in order to tell information to the police. And to be honest and blunt here, this makes a lot of sense. This seems horrible that it goes against the right against self-incrimination, and it's just all kinds of bad. Now, many courts will not allow any truth serum results or expert testimony over truth serum results from expert witnesses until it is proven with verifiable certainty that truth serum compels a person to tell the truth, as opposed to just drugging them and getting them to say whatever. Most people just don't like it, and that's why you don't have it used a lot. Darth Vader has some wonderful life lessons on contracts. And so let's talk about Vader on contracts. Back to Empire Strikes Back, he tells Lando, "I am altering the deal. You do have a right to modify a contract. However, when you think of the traditional rules of offer, acceptance, consideration, then performance, you can't have duress as consideration to modify a contract." And in this case, Vader was threatening to leave a garrison on Cloud City in order to ensure performance from Lando Calrissian. And that's duress, and that would not be okay. Well, let's go back to Tatooine and Jabba the Hutt's palace and talk about employee safety, because employers are supposed to keep safe places for employees to work. And Jabba's palace was not a safe place, my friends. There's a big trap door in the floor, and people can fall through it like a guard and then get eaten. Well, here on Earth, floors with holes that persons can accidentally walk into, like in a construction site, has to have a cover on it or a railing so people don't fall through and die. Well, let's talk about that unfortunate palace guard and the Rancor. So he falls through the trapdoor, which, again, it's a trapdoor, so that's just evil. But premises liability for property owners who know that there's a dangerous animal on their property are going to be liable for it. And the traditional example is, you know, there's an alligator in your backyard. And you tell someone, hey, go ahead, hang out back there. If they get attacked by the alligator and you didn't warn them there was an alligator back there, that's bad. Well, the rancor was a free roaming wild animal that had been imported to Tatooine and then confined in a cage under a trapdoor. So if people fell through the trapdoor and got eaten, that was the entire point of having the trapdoor and the confined dangerous animal. So in that case, it's highly foreseeable that the creature could accidentally eat the wrong person, which is what happened to that poor guard. Now let's talk about everybody's favorite bounty hunter, and that would be Boba Fett, who technically is an independent contractor. So when he goes out on Jabba's barge to the Sarlacc pit for the execution of Han, Luke, and Chewie, he's an independent contractor. And independent contractors are treated as business invitees. Jabba had a duty to provide Boba Fett with a reasonably safe work environment or give warning of any danger. So they're over this giant Sarlacc pit. However, Jabba was not the insurer of Boba Fett's safety. So when Boba decided to take on Luke, a Jedi Knight, and get into this tussle, and then end up flying into the barge and falling into the Sarlacc pit, that's all on him. He knew the risks of being a bounty hunter, and as such, deserved to get digested for 1,000 years. Well, let's talk about our droids, because while we're in Jabba's palace, there's a torture chamber for droids. Little guy's hung upside down and his feet are burned, and that's just, well, evil. Why do you make machines that have feelings that you can intimidate and inflict pain upon? That's a little weird. Well, the law states that if you cause cruel or extreme pain and suffering for the purpose of revenge, extortion, persuasion, or any sadistic purpose, that's torture. That's for people, or there's cruelty to animals. Droids are neither, so it's a little weird. So why do droids have feelings? Does this make them less like a machine and more like an animal? Because R2 is one loyal little droid, and could someone who tortures a droid be prosecuted like they're committing cruelty to animals? I think yes, if they actually develop this issue a little further, because why would you make something that feels and then let people torture it? That just seems really sadistic and a bad thing. Well, let's talk about the fact that there's one universal truth, and if those who saw the news today, Disney is planning to reportedly release on Blu-ray the original Star Wars trilogy without any enhancements. So that means we can see Han shoot and be the only guy who shoots when he's confronted by Guido. So in the revised version, we have Han at gunpoint, and he does shoot second, and someone at point blank range misses him. That's just crazy. Well, self-defense is frequently misunderstood. So going back to 1977, self-defense requires that a person, from the nature of the attack, the assailed person believes on reasonable grounds that he is in imminent danger of losing his life or of receiving great bodily harm from his assailant. He is not bound to retreat, but may stand his ground and, if necessary for his own protection, may take the life of his adversary. And that case is from 1942. And there are cases that deal with stand your ground in California, at least going back to the 19th century. So it's not a new doctrine that if you're cornered, you have no place to retreat. So in our fact pattern, Han has his back to the wall. He's in the seated position, held at gunpoint. He slyly unclips his gun and shoots his capturer from beneath the table. Now, you have to think about what's said here. The exchange has stated, Jabba may only take your ship, to which Han states, over my dead body. Now they're replying. This is important. That's the idea. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. Now, Han does state, yeah, I bet you have, before icing him, but he was legally justified to do so. So with that, my friends, those are just some of the legal issues from Star Wars and Rebels, and we'll see what we will be able to talk about after we get to watch The Force Awakens. And so, my friends, remember, the law will be with you, always.